Hi, I'm Jesse Hirsch. Welcome to the Future Herd. I've always been fascinated by how people find their way into leadership. Not through a straight line, but through curiosity and saying yes to unexpected opportunities. Jen McTavish embodies that perfectly. She started with a dream of law school, stumbled into animal science through a university course catalog, and has since traveled the world working with agricultural organizations. And now she's leading the Agricultural Adaptation Council through a critical transition, bringing her unique blend of hands-on experience, humility, and an infectious enthusiasm for learning. Of course, the AAC is our partner organization, and Jen is a member of our production team. And that's part of the reason why, for episode 20, we're bringing Jen on to add a little more transparency to how we put things together, but also to take a moment of introspection, of reflection, of thinking about what we've accomplished so far and what we plan to do next. So in this episode, we'll talk about what does adaptation really mean? How do we create leadership cultures that nurture talent instead of burning it out? And what can we do to make the future heard so that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts? All right, let's tune in. Welcome to the Future Herd.
Thank you, Jesse. Good to see you.
Now, because I know you've actually listened to a few of our episodes, I can roll right into our first question. What does the future mean to you?
Why do they? I am not prepared to answer that question, despite having listened to all of the podcast episodes. I don't know what it means to me, but I think when I think about the future, the feelings I get are, curiosity, excitement. Kind of like a brave new world are the words that are coming to me. I think the world's going in a direction you've never seen before. And I'm kind of curious to see how it ends.
Let's hope we make it there. Now, one of the advantages I have in today's episode is this is not our first conversation. And so I will indulge in referencing conversations we've had that our podcast audience do not necessarily have access to. But I was thinking that the one thing I don't know, in spite of us having quite a number of really interesting chats, is how you got into agriculture. I don't think I really know your origin story from a sectoral perspective.
It's a bit of a long story. I grew up in Brampton, which is not really known for agriculture much anymore at all. And I went to university destined for law school, or so I thought, but found out when you go to Guelph, you could take a whole course on horses and a whole course on pigs. And I was in international development, and most development work is agriculture based. And so I just followed the trail. I got a BA in international development. I went back, got a BSc in animal science. Thankfully, they had production courses at the time at the university. And then had a prof at the University of Guelph who got me hooked on nutrition and ended up getting a master's in ruminant nutrition and fell into agriculture through just saying yes to all the things in front of me that interested me the most.
I think there's a thread worth pulling there in terms of, the way in which leadership is a kind of a force of gravity, that as long as you don't resist it, it kind of draws you in. But a tangent there, with your early international development stuff, did that either enable or encourage you to do any travel? And if so, I'm curious where you went and what your experiences were like.
So I did not travel much in the ID degree. We had plans for travel that got canceled and things kind of, I traveled mostly through my work in agriculture. And it's sort of weird how things sort of come full circle. I wanted to do like trade law, a lot of agriculture was trade. So things find that you end up exactly where you're meant to be. But through work, I was really super fortunate to be able to go to some pretty awesome places.
Let me use that as an excuse to allow you to get into them, because a lot of the leaders that we talk to on the podcast, you know, their leadership path, I don't want to say is narrow, but it's kind of focused. Versus you do have a diversity, for lack of a better word. Like one of the themes I keep coming back to on the podcast is perspective. I'm curious about the perspectives that leaders get. Yours is diverse. You've had a lot of interesting perspectives. So why don't we use that as a way to describe the different opportunities that have kind of you've stumbled into from your own description.
Yeah, like I think, you know, in addition to saying yes to the things that interest me, which I encourage everybody to do, is, you know, I ended up in an industry where I was allowed to take on positions, for better or for worse, that were kind of punching above my weight. And so I worked in the sheep industry for a lot of years, and through working in the sheep industry, I got to go and do travel in New Zealand and Australia and Europe and talk about things like animal health and sit around the table with people who had so many more years of experience than I did and had such a rich diversity and history of experience. I don't take for granted how lucky I was to have that at my age that I was when I was doing it. And then was, you know, because I learned a lot. I would just say I learned so much through that experience. And of course, you know, I was chatting with somebody the other day and we were talking about a situation they were in. And I said, you know, I'm just giving you this advice because I've made that mistake, right? Like I made so many mistakes. And I think that's where, you know, the real kind of diversity of my leadership that you speak of really comes from, is where I fumble.
If anything, that's why we should be allowing young people to get into positions of leadership early. Yeah. So they have the runway to fuck up and learn from those mistakes in a healthy way. But there's something I want to tease out that I kind of inferred in your description, which is a joy of learning. Because that is the flip side to making mistakes. Because if you don't learn, you're just going to keep repeating those mistakes. And it sounds like part of your North Star, if I want to use that cliche, is you kind of enjoyed those challenges and enjoyed those opportunities because they were hands-on learning. Am I right in thinking that?
In hindsight, 100%. In the moment, it's tough to enjoy it, especially when you have the capacity and are afforded that capacity to say, yeah, that was wrong. Or that was a really bad decision. And you were lucky enough to have people around you who were gracious and said, yeah, it's no problem. Here we go. This is how we fix it. So I think not only was I learning by doing, I was learning by doing in an environment where people had my back and where people were super gracious when I came back to them with an apology and they were like, yeah, no problem. Here we go. Let's fix it. Right. I think that's where we really fail sometimes, is when we aren't gracious with people enough to say, you know what, you made a mistake and it's not life limiting and this is how we're going to fix it. And you have their back. I think that I've had a lot of conversations with people who haven't had that level of support around.
Part of what I get to do as the host of this podcast is flatter my guests. And in your case, in your case, you're really evoking wisdom, right? And the way in which wisdom is both a byproduct of failure, a byproduct of support and the kind of encouragement that follows failure, but also, you know, a consequence of the path we take. And what you're describing is not so much a path of intention, but more a path of curiosity and a path of openness. Yeah. you know, now that I'm foregrounding it, what role do you think wisdom plays in the way in which a leader matures over time to ideally grow into more powerful positions? But I think what I'm also hearing is develop a healthy sense of humility that allows that leadership to be even more effective.
Yeah, like I think, so there's just something, I'm going to pick on a word there, like powerful. Like, I think leadership happens regardless of what position you're in or where you sit in an organization or if you're even in an organization. And I think humility is really the point. I think if we can create environment and workspaces where people are encouraged to make mistakes. You know, I had a board chair once say, it's okay if you're making a mistake, it means you're doing something. So if we encourage that in people and we have guardrails around them as the people who've been through it in the past, right? To sort of be able to show them the exit or, you know, the bend, the curve in the road. That's our best way to help build resilience within that person who we see as somebody who has great potential in the industry, and also to keep them in the industry.
Right? I think that retention piece is easy to gloss over in no small part because the people who leave can be forgotten, right? They're not always there to be counted. And when we first met, you kind of gave me this image of generational change, which really resonated with me. And in fact, I've used it in talking to other people, which is those of us of a certain age, and I would qualify it as either Gen X or kind of, you know, older millennial. We've seen our leaders take a lot of crap, and we've seen young people elevated into positions of leadership who took a lot of crap. And many of us are just like, yeah, no thanks. I don't know if I want to subject myself to that kind of a scrutiny and harassment. The most obvious example of this, of course, is elected office, that we used to, in theory, get the best and brightest running for elected office. Now the best and brightest are like, no, thank you. I don't want to go there. I'm rambling, but I would love to hear you kind of share your thoughts on this, not just in terms of assessing kind of what's happening, but to your last answer, how we can address it, how we can reverse it and incentivize people who should be taking these opportunities, leaning in to the kind of responsibility and opportunities that are in the sector, but kind of don't want to take the crap that they've seen other people take.
Yeah, that's a super good question. And, you know, I've had this conversation with a lot of people, some of whom are like staring down retirement and they're like, where is my succession? And so that part of the conversation is how do we prepare our leaders? So we're going to use leaders here in the terms of like our general managers or our senior leaders with job titles. How do we prepare them and get their minds wrapped around the fact that the best legacy they have is a good succession plan, and, you know, train, mentor their replacements, if you will, the bad word, but replacements. But you're right. Like, I know a couple of really bright, enthusiastic people who I would love to just keep in the industry. And they don't have to be in this industry. They are choosing to work here. And I am trying my best to be like, how do we keep you here? How do I introduce you to people who I think could be good mentors? How do I help you find jobs that align with your skill set or your interests? And I think that's part of what we have to sort of engage in as well. Like, we could have really good people working for us and we want them in the industry, but do they have to be in our organization, or can we mentor them into a role where they're just in our other department? Like, our industry is so small. We don't lose them when they go to another org. They just move to our other department, if you will. And so there's two kind of paths here, right?
Well, and I think what you're describing is a different culture. Right. On the one hand, it's kind of a network culture where you're sort of accepting that there's a larger ecosystem and that we don't need to be hoarding talent. We don't need to be hoarding resources. There's, you know, a natural need to work together. But there's something else you said that kind of gave me this insight, which is agriculture is really a unique sector when it comes to talent. Because on the one hand, from my perspective, and this is certainly what I'm learning and doing in the future herd, agriculture produces incredible talent, like absolutely incredible talent. The ingredients that are in place, especially for people who grow up in the sector, really creates talented, diverse, and resilient people. But they're not really valued. And they can go to almost any sector, take those skills and apply those skills outside of the sector and probably make more money and get more respect and get more recognition. And
probably make more money.
Right? Yeah. And that to me is the paradox that we kind of need to address, not just because we want to attract external talent, but because I think we need to do a better job of retaining and valuing existing talent. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the skill sets that people get when they work in agriculture and agricultural commodity groups, because we tend to be kind of small, so we're sort of like the jack of all trades, is easily transferable into industry where society holds more value. So you'll get paid more to do that. And I tell this crazy story about I had an employee stay with me probably 18 months longer than they should have for their skill sets because I let them bring their dog to work. Okay. If you can figure out how to, like, it's not, when we work in agriculture, we tend to work in agriculture because we're passionate, right? We love the industry. It is a great industry and you do get to learn so much. Like it has been probably one of the best choices of my life to stay in this industry. But it's not as well paid and the rewards aren't always there. And it does feel like a slog sometimes. And it can be incredibly disheartening. And so how do we set up ways to show value without it being a financial value to keep you in the industry? So. And I've had conversations with people about this as well, right? Like, for those of us who work in commodities, who work for farmers, we understand it's a 24/7 job. And sometimes we've got to work weekends and evenings and we have to be super flexible. That also could mean we get to work from home. It also could mean that, like, there's other ways that we can show value to our employees without it being a financial transaction. I'm not sure I answered your question. I went on my own tangent there. So feel free to poke me on that.
Well, one tangent, and it kind of sets up a transitional question because, you know, on the one hand, when I think of the solution, I think we need more leaders. We need diverse leaders. We need leaders that kind of address and articulate what you're addressing. And at the same time, it is kind of cultural that we're trying to kind of adjust the culture. I think partly to go back to a conversation I had in a few episodes previously, to return to the community-centric culture that agriculture had in terms of a healthy rural communities. But this allows me to kind of look at the Agricultural Adaptation Council, because I think part of what we're describing is adaptation. So to try to enable that transition, you know, we've been kind of talking about your journey both literally and conceptually, but how did you get connected with the AAC, right? Let's kind of, you know, make that link so we can then transition to kind of talking about the opportunities that lie therein.
So because I worked in Ontario Agriculture at a commodity organization, we all know the AAC, right? Because they did program delivery for the provincial government. So I'd known of it and had been on the periphery for a number of years. About 3 years ago now, I started working for myself. And through that, began doing some projects with Mel Doretto and CanLead. And CanLead was, Mel Doretto at the time was the executive director of the Agricultural Adaptation Council. And CanLead was the sister organization that the AAC had created. And Mel came to me and said that she was going to be stepping down to go to CanLead full time. And they needed an interim executive director to help AAC through this period of transition. They're reevaluating how they can better serve Ontario agriculture. And would I be willing to step in as the interim ED? And so I went through that application process. I believe there was a couple of us who applied for that position. And thankfully, I did get it. And so I've been there since January in the interim ED position and helping them through this process of their strategic review.
So let me ask you a very Jesse question. What does adaptation mean to you?
Yeah, I think it means resilience. I think it means the ability to be nimble and change how you respond to what's going on around you. I think it means foresight. Like, what do you see coming so that you can be nimble and you can set yourself up for success? And it may be a nice full circle question, Jesse. Is that curiosity? Let's be curious. Let's look at what's happening. What if we just talked about the beginning of the podcast? Yeah. All that. Maybe I'm the best fit for the transition, after all.
Part of, correct me if I'm wrong, part of the paradox of a transition is that, hopes are high, but authority is not necessarily there, right? And even further, I always understood, correct me if I'm wrong, that the AAC is kind of a meta organization because your members are organizations who have members. Yep. So it makes decision making not only kind of delicate, but at the same time, it is a unique opportunity where a lot of the groups who are normally doing their all thing can kind of come together and focus on the big picture. So I'm curious where you find opportunity in that or where you find passion in that, because at the one hand it can be overwhelming, but on the other hand, to go back to my prioritizing perspective, you can start seeing things that no one else in the sector can see.
Sure. And I think Where I get really excited in doing this work with the Adaptation Council is precisely because there is no lack of opportunity. When you start talking to our members, because the members are really diverse. So we have primary commodity organizations, we have further processors, we cover a wide swath of the agri-food industry. So the opportunities there are almost endless. The challenge is, as we review kind of where we want to go in that strategic direction, how do we maintain, not authority, but that sense of enthusiasm and walk people through the period of transition? Because that periods of transition are not comfortable for people. They make people feel a bit shaky. Sometimes they don't want to be part of it, so they're gonna sort of exit along the side. But how do we maintain that core and keep us focused and enthusiastic about the unknown? We are chartering a new path here. We don't know where we're going to land, but isn't this kind of the fun part of it? Like, let's figure it out. And that really is where I get excited and what is making me really love this job at the moment.
Again, if I were, my job is to flatter, I think what you did really quite effectively there is evoke a new model of leadership. And I think you're evoking this new model of leadership kind of spontaneously based on your own experience, based on your own perspective. But I'll frame it and then I'll throw it to you as a question. I think, for example, there's a paradox to change in the agricultural sector. Because on the one hand, when I look at the agricultural sector, I see change like all the time, like lots of innovation, lots of new practices, lots of ways of constantly improving yields, right? Improving capacity. But that change is only acceptable to people in the sector if they feel that they are the one deciding it. Because, oh boy, do they hate change when they feel that it's not them, the ones deciding it. And it creates a paradox for the leader, because on the one hand, the leader can't say, hey, everybody, let's do this, unless everybody wants to actually do that. How do you balance the need to embrace that change with the need to have everyone feeling that that change is what they want in the sense of ownership and engagement? A difficult question, but, you know, that's how we roll here at the Future Herd.
Yeah. So my first response is nobody likes change. This isn't just an agricultural issue, right? Nobody likes change that's imposed on them. And we have a lot of experience with that in the this year, right? When the whole world started changing, so many of us, it creates instability. It creates a sense of insecurity. Nobody loves change. So we have to recognize that. On the flip side, we are where we are. And we know that the previous way of existing, the previous way of doing business might not be sustainable. It might not be best serving the industry. It might not be in our best interest. And so while we may want to stay there, even if we don't do anything, we might not be able to stay there. So instead of letting the future happen to us, why don't we create it?
Again,
my response to that question.
Again, to keep the question difficulty as high as possible, because we don't want to be perceived as giving you any special treatment here in the podcast. What are the obstacles to that?
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, the way you describe it, it seems self-evident. It seems quite reasonable. But obviously it isn't. Obviously, this is a much more difficult challenge.
It's not. Yeah. The challenge here is that human emotion comes into play. So what I just described is a quite pragmatic way of attacking something. And not very often are we good at making pragmatic decisions, right? Emotion comes into play all the time. And so really what we have to balance is, you know, giving people the space. This is language I use. This is not language that people around me would use. But giving people the space to have that emotional moment. Giving people the space, I call it kick your feet out of your pajamas, giving them the time to kick their feet out of their pajamas. And I don't mean that derogatory, like in an awful way. It's just, sometimes we gotta have that big cry and then we can, you know, look at things a little bit more objectively. And also we have to hold space for one another. Part of this is you know, we can't just do it and come across as being top-down changing. We have to go out and start talking about it. We have to go out and start telling people, okay, these are the kinds of changes that we need to make. If we can get people to provide input and ideas, if we can get people to start talking about it really early on in the process, the more likelihood that the change is going to be sustainable, the more likelihood that it's going to be implemented. Coming in kind of with this top-down approach, I've never seen that actually quite work.
And that's why, again, I want to keep repeating, both for our benefit, but for the listener's benefit, that we are describing a model of leadership, a vision of leadership, which is innovative, which does incorporate elements that are not already in place. So a question I probably should have asked earlier in the episode, and it is something that I think about often when you and I chat. What role has conflict resolution and conflict mitigation, both as a skill, but also as a concept? Because it's clearly part of the way in which you approach these situations. You may take it for granted, but I see it. I see it in both your curiosity and your confidence. So I'd love for you to tease it out.
So I will say that if you had met me 15 years ago, it would be a completely different person. And we would not be having this conversation. But I had a job that had a lot of conflict. And there was a woman at the time, I wish I could remember her name. She was not in agriculture. And she's they teach a whole course on understanding conflict. And I'm sign me up. Subsequently got addicted, and I do now do volunteer mediation, and it literally changed how I approach people. It literally changed how I approach my work. I don't want to sound overly dramatic, but it definitely changed. It changed how I manage, right? It made me much more externally focused. It made me much more process focused than outcome focused. One of the things that we get taught when we do transformative mediation classes in particular is that the people who are engaged in the process are the ones who are responsible for the outcome. You just have to make sure they stick to the process. And that is now how I try and sometimes fail at managing people, managing staff, managing issues, working. So it is all about bringing people along in the journey and getting curious. The minute you start to feel like you're getting defensive, or you think the person across the table from you is a complete moron, ask questions. Dig in.
And
I went on a huge tangent there. Sorry.
That you hit that right out of the park, because I think unequivocally any aspiring leader today would dramatically increase their capacity, their empathy, and their resilience by having the kind of skills that you just described, because unfortunately we live in a world with a lot of conflict, and I think that conflict is going to be increasing. So to your point, to have within the manager's toolkit the ability to de-escalate, the ability to resolve, the ability to make people feel like their grievance has been addressed, I think that's indispensable. And without transitioning off the subject, which we do have to because we have other things to talk about. Yeah. How would you advise people to, short of going to take similar courses, to kind of operationalize that or integrate that into their practice of leadership?
Well, that's a big question. There's a few tricks I have. One is lean into the questions, right? Like, just start asking questions, because oftentimes, I say this a lot, like the TSM turning point, yes, for me was in the very first class, when they're like, you judge others on their behavior, you judge yourself on your intent. And so find out their intention, because sometimes their behavior isn't their intention, because we don't know how to translate ourselves properly. Sometimes the words come out wrong, we say the wrong thing, we're all a little bit awkward. So try to find intent. What is their intention? And try to find that common ground, because if our goal is to do X, right, but we're both behaving like idiots, if we could focus on that goal or that intention instead of our behavior, we can, we can find a path forward. And I'm going to say something that's a little bit, maybe, I don't know how people will receive it. So my intent is that it's helpful, is that we have to remove our ego from this. This isn't about being right. This isn't about having the answers. This isn't about being viewed as the best boss ever. It goes back to doing what's best for the organizations we work in, for the industry that we work in. And that has, one of the biggest lessons I learned is that it's not about you. At the end of the day, all we're doing is racing each other to retirement, right? So, it's not about us or our ego. It really isn't. It's just about doing what's best for the space in which we are working and operating.
Point. The best leaders that I've encountered in a lifetime of studying leadership either have the ability to separate themselves from their ego and put their ego aside, or conversely are so confident and secure in their ego that they're not threatened and they're able to effectively put it aside, even if they don't know how. And recently, I actually heard a technically inaccurate but interesting analogy that neurodiverse people hear their ego versus neurotypical people are their ego, which I thought was an interesting.
Too deep for me.
Yeah, and I've had some neurodiverse people and neurotypical people kind of push back and say it's not that clear cut, but it's an interesting thought experiment. Now, ego.
Can I just say something? Because you said you're either really confident or whatever. It's just, I don't know what I am. I'm just okay with being wrong, and I'm okay with people thinking I'm a little bit odd, and I'm okay with the fact, I'm just a goofy girl. At the end of the day, I'm just kind of goofy and quirky, and I'm totally cool if that's what people think of me. So I don't know what's that. I don't know that I'm super confident, and I think people just have to be cool with, people are going to see you as they see you, and you're still going to go home to the people that love you, and you're still going to get to, Do the thing that you love, regardless of what people think of you. So just, yeah, I don't know.
That you know, to go to the power of attention, in an era of easy distraction, it's easy to forget what matters. And that's especially true when it comes to work, but it's even more true when it comes to our sense of ourself. And that's part of, to transition, a part of why I kind of enjoy doing this podcast, right, in that I can sort of transparently be both excited about learning, excited about talking to the guests we have on the show, but also inserting myself into the conversations, as imperfect and flawed as that is, and being totally comfortable being the crazy weirdo that I am. I use that as a setup because you are ostensibly the first guest, and this is our 20th episode, so it's kind of a milestone. You're the first guest who's actually listened to at least some of the episodes. Most of the guests we've had on haven't listened to any of the episodes, which is fair. I don't expect them to, but now I get to actually have a conversation of, so Jen, of the episodes you've listened over the last 20 odd, any that instantly come to mind? And as you know, the game we play here on the Future Herd is gut instinct, so it's whatever comes to mind first. But is there any guest that you were particularly excited about listening to, or a particular subject that you were like, yeah, right on?
Yes, there's a few, right? Like Tyler McCann, I listened to, and I love listening. I worked with him a long, long time ago, or adjacent to him a long, long time ago. And so it's kind of like, oh, I know this guy, you know, it's just nice to hear what he has to say. And I watch what happens with Chappie. Lori Nichol, that was my first time hearing her. I've heard her name. I've worked with people who work with her. And so her podcast was everything I thought it would be, everything I hoped it would be. It was kind of like, you know, hearing someone who you thought would be really cool, and then they were. And there was a young lady you interviewed, and unfortunately her name is escaping me at some moment, but I believe she was with, like, Jordan was her name, maybe? Jordan.
Yes, Jordan Domio, Young Farmers of Ontario.
Yeah. Oh, God. We got to hang on to her. She's a girl we've got to, like, keep in the industry, absolutely, for sure. And, yeah, there's been so many. Like, all of them have been really interesting. Those are the three that kind of popped to mind, like, right away.
Well, and let's...
But for different reasons.
You know, part of the cliche of agricultural leaders is they wear many hats. And this is true of people in the policy world as well, that, you know, the nature of Canada being the kind of relatively small country we are is that you do get people who show up in different circles with different roles. You're doing that today in the episode, in that on the one hand, you're a leader in the agricultural sector. On the other hand, you're a leader within the agricultural Adaptation Council, which is a partner for the podcast. But on the other hand, you're part of the production team of the podcast. So you're kind of coming at this the way I'm coming at this, with multiple personality disorder. So I'm curious, within those three different angles, what have been some of the themes, or what are some of the topics? What are some of the subjects that have come up that have circulated in your head beyond just the actual listen?
So for me, the downside is that I'm gravitating to the stuff that naturally perks my curiosity, which is like the younger people coming up that I want to identify and be like, I want to know that I know them, or I want to know how to be able to connect them. So when someone tells me they need someone, I can be like, I got you. I'm going to hook you up. But through the other lens, like, and again, full circle, coming back to like my food in international development stuff, around food security and food distribution. And so when we talk about our food system, I mean, you've interviewed some pretty interesting people out of BC that I wish I was better at names, Jesse. This is a whole
Tresca thing. Watson.
Thank you, Tresca. And, you know, coupling her interview with Lori Nichol is a really interesting, like, one after the other. That's a pretty cool way to spend 2 hours of your day if you're wanting to geek out on food security and how and where that plays into. And then when we look at it through the lens of where we're headed and what's going on in the world today, and you know, how we are going to, from my perspective, get really creative around how we solve some of the big problems that are facing us. You know, guys like Camden Lawrence and bringing in some more of that Indigenous knowledge and how we support local food production. That's a really cool podcast too. So I really, you know, I am biased. You've declared our bias already. I think we've had, I think we've been pretty good at curating a very interesting set of podcasts for people to listen to. I hope get people really thinking outside the box. Right.
Where, you know, to do our what's the industry flag I'm looking for? To do our promo, part of what we're trying to do with the podcast is take the kind of one-on-one to the collaborative level, to the synthesis level, to what I often think of as jazz, where you get a whole bunch of people kind of jamming together. So tell listeners about the panel that we're organizing and kind of what you want to get out of it.
Sure. So we are organizing a panel with Lori and Tyler and Camden. And what I really want to dig into is, you know, we're talking about a national food security strategy, food sovereignty work. And I really want to dig into what that means. Like, what does it mean for them to have a resilient food system in Canada? What does it look like in action? Because I know we talk about stuff a lot. We're super good at talking about stuff. But if we're going to high five ourselves in 2 years because we hit the ball out of the ballpark, what does it actually look like? What did we accomplish? And what do they wish people knew? Like, what about some of the speed bumps that are in their way to getting us to where we need to be food sovereign or food secure?
Well, and to your point,
that's what I really want to dig into.
Blew me away in both the conversation with Lori and the one with Neil from the Toronto Daily Bread Food Bank is they take their perspective for granted. Like, they see the problem in a way I think a lot of people don't, but they also see the solutions in a way a lot of people don't. So I think that's the power in bringing these folks together and kind of stitching it along. Let's give the listeners a kind of a glimpse behind the scenes or a procedural side. And here, you know, this is more a speculative than realistic because we're talking about the future. But how will you advocate or how will you argue that the broader agricultural adaptation council should make use of the knowledge and material that we're generating, right? Because on the one hand, we're bringing these people together, we're creating all these conversations, but that's, you know, there's only so much that you and I can do. On another level, it's for the members and for the participants to kind of take further. So I'm curious to hear how you'd frame it.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, directly answer your question, but I'm going to tell you kind of my wish list, right? I hope that what we're doing through this podcast is introducing listeners to people in agriculture that they should talk to. So when they're having questions or when they want to do consultations or when they want to get information, we are, as much as agriculture is kind of small and people know each other, I would love to give them a way into a conversation. So that they could, you know, call up Steph Towers. We did an interview with her, podcast with her, I believe, right? And say, hey, I heard you on this podcast talking about X. I want to talk some more about that. I really hope that people are able to use some of what they're hearing and get curious about it and maybe sit on it for a bit and help it maybe reframe how they're thinking about what's going on in the world or how they should be engaging with their politicians or their commodity organizations or whatever, right? So I hope it expands. I hope our podcasts are both making introductions both to people and to new ways of thinking or new ideas or new perspective. That's what I hope.
And I would sort of tag on to that. And this is more the blue sky part of every episode that I like to have in the future heard. what do you think? Where are the gaps? What do you think is missing? And I'm asking this on an organizational level, because the last question really was kind of the AAC question, right? Like, what can the AAC do, and what is, you know, within your role in the AAC? But let's take a moment to look even bigger, right? Like, what is the sector missing, either organizationally, intellectually, or even individually? Because I kind of like the vision you're describing, that the Future Herd is kind of a talent scouting process where we're trying to get people on a stage so that other people can see them on the stage and go, yeah, I like that story, or I like that play. But we can't do that alone. Mm-hmm. Right? What other pieces in the sector could you imagine to really achieve the vision of leadership that we've been articulating and evoking today?
God, that's a good question.
And you may not have an answer. I'm spitballing this, but it's kind of an intuitive thought.
Yeah. I think what I keep coming back to is, what does it look like? So we talk about the need for more collaboration. We talk about the need for, you know, bringing everyone together. And when we do that, like, we bring them together into a room, and the group, the industry is very good at facilitation and having group meeting. But where's the why? So why are we doing it? And what does collaboration mean? Like, so the question I ask, I just had this conversation with somebody the other day, like, to what end? So we're going to send out a survey. We're going to ask people for their opinion, but to what end? So I think sometimes we have to challenge ourselves. We have done this in agriculture. We get around the table. We have discussions with our minister about the next policy framework, but to what end? Where is that going, and how is that going to change our next policy framework? Where are we seeing, like, how are we going to do different? How are we going to move the needle? And how do we know we've done it? That would be mine. I'm really curious to what
end. How do we make sure that the podcast not only kind of reinforces the larger AAC process in terms of enabling the sector, but you've kind of created a challenge that I want us to continue to focus on, which is more than just this new vision of leadership. It's the talent scouting. Right? That I almost felt that you were creating not just an opportunity, but a responsibility for us to find that future leadership, to engage that future leadership, to create, in my view, a stage for that future leadership. You know, as we wrap up this conversation, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how we could best do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd play short answer. I don't know. I think that there's some stuff that we're doing alongside the podcast that it's helpful, like the Commons that you created, which is a website where people can go in and kind of, you know, chat amongst themselves on certain topics. I think that's helpful. I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. But I think we got to put a pin in it. Like, I think this is something that we need to come back to really be intentional, to make sure that, you know, we're not just talking about it, that we can actually act on it.
That kind of speaks to another thing that I wanted to bring up in our conversation today, which we are doing in this episode for the first time, which is to circle back. Because there is a tendency in podcasts, there is a tendency in kind of internet media that you don't look back. That you just keep creating episodes and you keep going on to the next subject and the next subject versus I think the power of the Future Herd is in connecting to past episodes, is in revisiting past subjects. You know, for example, we're doing it now in food security, and at some point we'll probably focus on a different subject. But we should still come back to food security at some point in the future and go, what progress have we made? What have we learned? I'm curious to kind of have you riff off that, respond on that. But in particular, I'm trying to get you to think about ways in which we can formalize it, either by you and me coming back every 10 or 20 episodes, or, you know, to the larger point of engaging people and having other people help us with this process of circling back.
I love this idea of circling back. I don't know if it was our actual intent when we started, but I love the fact that this is where we've landed. And I love that it, you know, this theme of continuous improvement, continuous learning, right? I would love to hear from the listeners. Are we hitting the mark? Are we giving you content that is, you know, landing with you? And how is it landing? Because I can have this great vision that I hope it, you know, generates new ideas and gets you thinking in a different perspective. But is it? I don't know. And maybe that's where we, you know, we request people's feedback. And I think it would be, you know, as we bring together Camden and Lori and Tyler for the panel discussion, maybe that's the question we ask them as well. Like, how do you think this is landing? How do you think this is working as a way for us to be continually improving? I think if we let people know that we are serious about feedback, we want it, then they'll find a way to give it to us.
Right on.
I hope. Yes. Challenge,
you know, as we close, you know, the last question I always throw to people is a shout out. But in this case, the almost last question, I'm also going to have you do a shout out, because I'm a big believer in transparency in media production. That was kind of why I wanted to have you on the show.
Sure.
So that people knew who else to blame when they hate particular episodes, or who else to celebrate when they think that what we're doing is so amazing. Do you mind giving a shout out to the other person who is an integral part of our production process, but has been too bashful to accept my invitation to come on the air?
Mr. Peter Katona is sitting in the background every Monday morning with us. Yeah, and not appearing on the podcast. So he deserves a shout out. Absolutely. He's with the Agricultural Adaptation.
He deserves credit for the brand, the Future Herd, because it was very much a consequence of his iteration and design. So a big shout out to Peter Katona. Yeah. I do like to ask our guests, is there anything that we did not talk about today that you want to get into before we close?
Yeah, we covered a wide range of topics. I think we are good for now. Thank you.
Who are the leaders you look up to? Who are the people who inspire you that either we should be booking as a guest on the show, or that we should be checking out in the world of media and ideas?
So, yeah, there's a lot. Then some of them I've already given you as podcast hosts, so we will let people just hear them as they come up. But I think there's people who I have watched who I, you know, aspire to be, like Dr. Deb Stark out of Ontario. She's awesome. Mike McMorris, who is sort of retired at the moment, was a huge mentor of mine and worked with Beef Farmers of Ontario and Livestock Research Innovation. I don't want to name too many because I know I'm forgetting people. But, you know, my board members who were through all iterations, who provided great counsel and great leadership and an incredibly soft place to land when things went sideways. To all of them, I think they deserve a round of applause.
You know, while it does have the risk of getting too far into the weeds, perhaps a future panel for the show could be the nature of boards. What makes a good board member? How to think about board governance in general? Because it is one of those things that's kind of neglected, that people don't think about.
Yeah.
But it's a keystone of the entire sector, which, you know, now that we're in the kind of closing, I did have a thought at one point that I'll throw at you to see as a joke, to see what you think. You know, often in leadership, we like to use acronyms like CEO or ED. But then I thought, you're an IED, an improvised explosive device. Well, what an incendiary leadership position to have.
Perfect.
Again, jokes aside, but it does speak to the power of the position. Thanks, Jen. Fantastic episode. And we'll have you back on the episode real soon now with the panel.
Thanks so much, Jesse. It was a good conversation. I appreciate it.
I certainly intend to have Jen on the podcast as frequently as possible. I think today's conversation illustrated the unique perspective she brings, but also the connections that I think we'll be starting to take advantage of in the episodes to come. And of course, we will be having the panel that we mentioned shortly. If you want to dive deeper into today's discussion, but of course all the episodes that we've done on the Future Herd, head over to our website, thefutureherd.ca, where we have show notes, links, knowledge articles, threads that connect all the different episodes we've done. This is our 20th, and we have built quite the knowledge base. In fact, the platform that I've been building around the podcast has both been a lot of fun to build, but it's an interesting piece of software that I suspect we'll be talking about more in the future. Of course, you can download our older episodes via your favorite podcast network. You can check us out on YouTube. If you have any feedback, send us an email, tweet us. Whatever social media of choice, you could tell everybody why you think The Future Herd is a great podcast or terrible. But until next time, I'm Jesse Hirsch, and this has been The Future Herd.